This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast. You're hearing from Cole March and Triangle Pest Control's Donnie Shelton and PCO Bookkeepers, PCO M&A Specialist, and TurfBook's Dan Gordon, as well as some of the biggest players in the pest control and lawn care industries. We're talking about what is changing in the industry and taking you straight to the front lines of what the future holds. If you're ready to grow your pest control or lawn care business, you're in the right place.
Hello, everyone. Welcome out to another edition of PMP Industry Insiders. I am your host, Donnie Shelton. Well, I'm actually from Cole March and Triangle, and I've got my hero, Mr. Dan Gordon, from PCO Bookkeepers, also doing M&A stuff. And today, Dan, we're talking about family challenges. We're going to be talking about challenges to grow in a family business. I know a lot of our folks, especially our listeners, you know, they have some sort of, you know, they're typically small businesses have either, you know, second generation or they've got current generation family members working in the business. And so super excited about our guest today, Mr. Tom Gibbons from FMW. Dan, do you want to talk a little bit about Tom?
Sure. So I met Tom, I'm going to say 10 years ago or more. Tom has a dual role. He is in a family business with two of his brothers, FMW, and he's also a WorkWave sales manager, Tom, or?
Industry strategist.
Dan. Industry strategist.
Ah, there you go.
There's had many titles over the years.
There's an MBA. So he's an industry strategist, and we actually met at one of the PestPak user conferences, and we got to talking, and you know, he asked me about his business, and we came in, and he became a client, and we've been working with him doing, you know, our CFO work and, you know, taxes and whatnot for many years, and we've become really good friends. And whenever I have a PestPak question or issue, I call Tom, and whenever he has a tax or accounting issue, he calls me. So I feel like we're even. And so, Tom, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yep. Great to have you, Tom. What a treat. It's good that you have kind of a dual role. You obviously understand technology with WorkWave and kind of how to use one of the most prevalent, you know, CRMs that we have in the industry, as well as your business background and being an operator. And so I think this is going to be a real treat for our listeners. And so, Tom, again, thank you for being on the show. Do you want to just give a quick overview of FMW, like, you know, kind of how you guys got started, you know, revenue that you guys are doing, markets that you service, those types of things?
Sure. No problem. So interesting story. Company kind of started by accident back in the 40s. My grandmother was working at a switchboard answering service in Framingham, Massachusetts. And the local exterminator wasn't returning people's phone calls. And she kind of got my grandfather to pick up and do side jobs. And that was kind of the birth of the business. Actually, great grandfather.
What a grandmother. That's awesome.
So, yeah, wait, so when cool. She was plugging the plugs in, she unplugged it and plugged it into your great grandfather. And
that's my great grandfather.
Hey, marketing.
I got a beat just for you.
We can only create something like that today. Like, oh, you wanted to call this guy? No, you're calling me. I love it. That's
surprise.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it kind of started from there, kind of by accident, little side jobs, and it kind of grew into a decent business. Back in the 60s, my dad was working for my grandfather in Framingham. Nice little operation going. They probably had four or five techs. And father and grandfather, funny enough, with the family business dynamics, didn't get along, CII. And my father packed up and moved about 25 miles away to a town called Walpole, and started his own business from scratch. So my father would sell life insurance during the day and at night go out and serve his pest control accounts and sell. So that was kind of the birth of it. So I kind of grew up with it. Thank goodness my grandfather and father reconciled back in the 80s. And then when he passed away, we inherited the Framingham operation, which had not really done much over the years. My father's operation in Walpole had done really well. We kind of had a bad reputation in Framingham. My father sent me in there in my early 20s and said, hey, clean it up, do what you have to do. And that was kind of the approach we had. And we gave away a lot of free services and termite jobs that my grandfather's team just hadn't done right. And so that's kind of, we made it right. So now we have a great reputation in the community because we did the right thing. So that's it. I got my two brothers that work with me. My sister works here in the office as well. Not an owner, but is part of the team. We'll probably do close to $4 million this year. We've always kind of had a decent growth, single digit. We didn't drive it really hard. It was kind of organic growth. We've never done acquisitions or anything like that. And I think over the past couple of years, you know, I think, Dan, you once referred to us as a lifestyle business when we first teamed up. We were profitable, we were comfortable, and I rocked the boat. And then we saw the multiples go to 3 and 4, and we decided we should probably rock the boat a little bit more. So that was kind of how we got started. So for us, kind of with retirement looming and stuff, we've recommitted ourselves to more aggressive growth. Over the past few years, we've seen double-digit growth, and part of that was thanks to Dan and his team. They were reviewing our P&L shortly after we started, and he said, you know, you guys don't spend nearly enough on advertising, and that's why you're not seeing the lead volume that you really should be having. So we were always at a point where we had kind of enough leads coming in to kind of offset the churn we had and give us a small amount of growth, but not really what we wanted to look at in the future. And as the three of us get older, I think we're all kind of saying, you know, where does this go? Are we going to build something for our kids to take over? Or are we going to build something to, you know, market at some point? So that's kind of where we're at this point.
So what challenges does having your two brothers present? I mean, you know, I've been there for a while and I've seen it. And, you know, we work with a lot of family businesses. And every family business, we work with a lot of really good family businesses, but they all say, geez, our family's dysfunctional. And I say, no, not at all. And I don't think yours is, but what challenges have you seen?
It's been a lot of challenges over the years. So I have to be honest. And, you know, early on, it wasn't easy. And that's part of the reason why I went and took the position with Marathon Data WorkWave, because we were just at each other's throats early on. And Mike Ayers, the founder of Marathon, came to me and said, hey, listen, would you be willing to help kind of consult in the industry? I worked closely with the developer, Jason Cockle, who designed the application way back when. So I was kind of the beta tester. He'd work at night, I'd test during the day, we'd go back and forth. So that's kind of how PestPak got started. So I was proud to be part of that and enjoyed that because my background was kind of, you know, application development programming. So it kind of fit right in. The problem is when we bought the company from my dad in 99, it was probably about a $1 million company. You know, we had two branch offices and there were like three or four techs in each office. Wasn't anything too tremendous. It just wasn't big enough to have three executives all wanting to have desk jobs. Some of us still had to be out in the trenches. So that was really kind of a problem. And as you know, you can't run a company as a democracy. So we had our share of problems. You know, I think our employees suffered at the beginning because we didn't have kind of a clear management structure. You know, one employee would come to me and ask a question, didn't get the answer they wanted. They'd go ask one of my brothers. It's kind of like kids do with their parents, right?
I was going to say, that sounds just like my kids. It sounds like they took, took a play from the Shelton kids, because that's exactly what they did.
So it was always a challenge. I feel bad looking back. You know, we had some great people on the team that I think we lost because of, you know, our inefficiency in being able to manage the company, or just, you know, three chiefs and no Indians kind of thing. So that was always a challenge for us. Fortunately, I think we've gotten to the point where the business has grown that we've each kind of found our own niches, what we're good at. So I currently serve as president of the company. I manage the marketing and the sales team, along with overseeing obviously the IT needs. So I work with PestPak and rolling out new features and modules with that. My brother Jim acts as kind of a general manager, works closely with our service team. And then my brother Mark oversees financial operations of the company, including like HR, payroll, payables, and accounts receivable. And it was interesting. It was kind of a normal progression. We all kind of worked into that role, which ended up working out pretty good for all of us.
You know, I was going to say, that's pretty interesting. I am a big fan of the book E-Myth. I read it many, many, many years ago when I first got into this industry. And one of the points, and the book is, it's gold. It's a little it's cringingly hard to listen to because they do kind of this role play back and forth. But one of the points he makes is, especially in family businesses, everyone needs to have a hat and there needs to be one person who's kind of the CEO, because he gets into this whole idea of a family business and how it should run. And I couldn't agree more that, you know, having three different bosses just sounds like absolute chaos. And so it's great that you guys are, yeah. So the fact that you guys have different like functional areas that you operate in, I think is a good way to run the business. And so, so now my question to you is, now that you guys have kind of these different roles, how has the dynamic between you all have changed? I mean, do you feel like there's a lot clearer direction? Do you feel like your employees know, okay, well, if I ask, you know, Tom this about sales, or he's holding me accountable for this specific sales goal, it's not like I can go to say one of the other brothers, or you know what I'm asking here? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of.
Yeah, you guys are united front. That's the
most days.
I don't mean a Thanksgiving table, but
so the employees kind of know who they go to for different questions. So if it's HR related, it goes to Mark. If it's something about operations, an irate customer, something like that, a bad review, it goes to Jim. You know, if, hey, my computer's not working, they come to me. or if they have a good idea, it comes to me. So it works out really good that way. So it's just kind of, it's fun to see how it's evolved by itself over the years. And, you know, definitely had some challenges early on.
So what do you think you know, working with WorkWave and seeing lots of different businesses, have you gotten some good ideas? What kind of ideas did you bring back to F&W from that whole thing?
So probably one of the best ones I ever saw were, you know, customer down in the deep south that was kind of doing monthly billing for customers and doing quarterly or triannual services. And, you know, we all know who that first guy was, but I'll respect their privacy. But I saw that and kind of the light went on for me. Being in the Northeast, one of our biggest problems is seasonality. So it was kind of twofold for us. We put, you know, you sell a quarterly service, and, you know, you might do three services a year. We have a lot of snowbirds around here, so they all disappear to Florida, come, you know, the 1st of November, and they come back sometime in April. So we'd lose the revenue by kind of borrowing that idea of the monthly payment plan with the quarterly service. People understand the model. I refer to it as the Netflix model. We're all used to it. You know, you pay your $17 a month or whatever it is, and you watch however movies you want. So we kind of sell our programs kind of the same way. You want to go to Florida, that's fine. Just like your homeowner's insurance in your home, we're covering your house for the full 12 months. If you need us, something goes on, we're here. If you choose not to have that service, that's fine. One of the surprising things that's come out of that is, like, we still have customers that don't want that winter service because they're gone, but they still pay us the revenue each month. So, you know, that account just got more profitable for us. So that's been really good.
So you get that you're paying for a pest-free environment instead of three services. That's one of the things that a lot of people need to get over.
Exactly.
You know, when you disassociate the payment from the service, that's when the refunds stop, right? Because you're just paying for that pest-free environment.
Well, you know, the other thing too is, I was going to say, when we went on this model, the thing I really liked about it was we're not chasing people for money for services that we've already performed. You know, in the monthly, you know, billing model, everything is prepaid. So if a customer calls up and says, "Hey, I want to skip the service," I'm like, "Oh, it's great for me," you know,
perfect.
Because hey, it's already prepaid. But you know, there's no going around and like, okay, so I do the service. I bill for the service. The customer doesn't pay for the service. Now I got to pay someone else to go try to get paid for the service that I already did. So it just, you know, it really, you know, it, as far as our AR, I mean, I know we've talked about this before, but, you know, we actually run at the beginning of the month negative net receivables, which is just crazy, but huge, huge benefit.
That's a new trend. So we're seeing that the last couple of years. I mean, we've seen people who have been doing it for a while, but a lot of people, you know, don't carry receivables. you know, beginning of the month, they bill everyone and you end up negative. So it's a good way to do business and you're not chasing your money. The only drawback is the amount of bounces that you get on credit cards. You know, there's a little bit of extra bookkeeping, but it's well worth it. I mean, there's no question about it. So
no, for sure. We were always super seasonal and cash flow was always an issue for us. You know, we'd go borrow on a line of credit in the wintertime to make payroll because we don't want to lose employees because we had some good people. So this has steadied out the cash flow for us tremendously. We don't have that bell curve that we once had. So it's definitely made life a lot easier. One of the other interesting trends I'm starting to see too, as I talk to other customers through WorkWave, is they're going from quarterly to triannual services and leaving the pricing model the same, which is amazing because, you know, then your profits just go up by 25%. So, you know, that's probably in our near future.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. So, you know, if you guys have an argument, how's it resolved? Do you shut the door and start throwing things around, or do you have a temper tantrum, or
it's a Jerry Springer show? Yeah, it was absolutely a Jerry Springer show. And I think that's typical of any family business. We were fortunate. Dad's still around. So when it got that bad, one of us would usually make a phone call to have him come in and referee. And he was always the voice of reason. So we all respect him. So he was able to put those arguments or disagreements to bed pretty quickly. So, and we still pull him in now when there's a stalemate or we're just not seeing eye to eye, and we appreciate his insight. He's a great resource for us. So we're super lucky to have that.
How old is he?
He just turned 85.
Oh my gosh. And he comes in and he bangs your heads together and tells you guys to just get along.
He golfs like 3 days a week, has a 6 handicap. I just hope I'm as good as him.
85 years old.
Yeah. I'm trying to break it.
Oh, I don't tell you. But that's such a great point, right? I mean, it is important, I think, to get, you know, sometimes, you know, we get running our business and we get really deep into the details. And it's great to have kind of an outside perspective. And so for F&W, you know, do you guys have a team of trusted advisors that you deal with in terms of the issues? You know, I mean, you think about the big things that happen in your business, right? The investment, you know, governments, or even, you know, growing the business, right? I mean, like, how do you guys get, I guess, different, how do you deal with those types of issues and how do you get advice? And
so definitely trusted advisors, but I think one of the very first things we did when, you know, the first couple of years, it was miserable. I mean, we weren't happy, employees weren't happy. It was not what we had envisioned, owning our own company and being entrepreneurs. We went to our company attorney at the time, and we all agreed we'd have a formal shareholders document written up. So that was kind of the first step for us, was to get that in place so we knew what the rules were. So now there's like, it's a level playing field. You know, if there's any questions on what we're going to do, here's how we go about the process. And there were things that the attorney brought up in that document that we hadn't even considered. So, I mean, that was one of the best things we ever did, because that stopped almost immediately a lot of the disagreements, because now it kind of set into the three of us that, hey, this is a business. We're going to run it like a business. We're a board of directors. We have to act as such. And here are the guidelines by which we do that. So that was key. And as Dan mentioned, you know, meeting him at Pest World years ago was probably one of the best things that ever happened to us. Because I tell people now, when I talk about Dan, I say he's our CFO. He basically keeps, you know, the train on the tracks. If there's a discrepancy, you know, one of the things that came up this year that Dan was crucial on was, you know, we had disagreements on the PPP loan stuff. So Dan was able to kind of get a conference call with my brothers and I, walk through the process, what his thoughts were on it, get everybody aligned, and we move forward with the process. So that was a huge credit to both of you guys. I think, you know, watching your seminars early on and then having Dan jump on the phone and walk us through it just made total sense at the end, and we were all, you know, on the same page. So, you know, a good CPA, a good attorney, ADP, we talked about earlier, has been great on the HR front for us. We're not big enough to have a full-time HR person. So having those resources like ADP Total Source at our disposal is just, you know, super. You have a workers' comp claim, they walk you through the process. If you think it's bogus, they walk you through the process. So it's really pretty cool.
So what were some of those things that in the legal document that that the attorney came up with that you had not considered?
Family members working for the company. It had to be unanimous vote if we were to bring somebody else in, a nephew or niece or child. You know, we weren't going to just stack the deck, if you will. Kind of a buy-sell agreement. You know, when somebody wants out, what's the process for that? And how does that person get out? If I decide I want to sell my shares, how does that work? So that was key. Kind of some of the resolution stuff that we talked about with arguments, you know, how that was handled. Kind of more defined job descriptions, who had the right to do what, you know. So as CEO, you know, I can spend up to $100,000 without going to the board of directors. So if I need to buy vehicles, I'm not handcuffed, have to have a board meeting or catch up with my brother. So just kind of the rules of the game like that were pretty good.
So if you need a motorhome or something, you don't have to go to your brothers.
Unfortunately, that's probably above my limit, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I do think it's a great point that, you know, when you walk through the business doors, you guys are now business owners. And when you walk out, you're brothers, right? And that really is right. The role that you have to play in the business. And so I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, we all get along much better now than we did in the early years. You know, the early 2000s were tumultuous times, to say the least. And now it's like, you know, we're friends again. We're dancing, we weren't friends.
Well, you definitely don't want to go the direction. I think you said where, you know, you guys, where it's, I think your grandfather your grandfather and your dad kind of went through. You don't want to be like that with your brothers. And so,
no,
so Well, I was going to say, so what advice do you have for other family-owned businesses when it comes to, you know, basically understanding the value of the business and then what things contribute or, you know, detract from that value? Like, what, I mean, obviously, I don't know that, you know, I think a lot of times one of the biggest issues I see is you have different goals from folks in the family. So you may have some that are like looking for, I'm all about value. I've got others who are like, well, we're all about cash right now. And, you know, and kind of getting those things in alignment, because I think that has a big, that I think that's what creates a lot of the friction. So
it does. And like I said earlier, Dan referred to us as a lifestyle business because I was always one that I wanted to grow it. I saw what my friends were doing with their businesses. I kind of knew what had to happen, but trying to get buy-in from the other shareholders was a challenge. So I think having that shareholders agreement certainly put us back on track. I think we're all, you know, we want the growth at this point. So that's been great for us. One of the key things for us is to certainly know what KPIs we're watching and tracking. You know, so our, you know, lead flow year over year is important to us, you know, callback ratios, not serviced. Those are all things that we track super closely. And that, again, having a good software platform like PestPack is awesome for that. You know, having people like Dan, you know, the marketing budget early on not being enough to generate the lead volume we need to achieve the growth we wanted. And that was something, hey, we're super profitable, this is awesome, but we were stealing from our marketing budget to be super profitable. Right. And that created other problems, you know, on the tax front. Right. So, yeah, so, I mean, it makes more sense.
I'm not going to deny, I like a big marketing budget.
I figured you would. Lord knows you have mine.
Wow. See that fancy fireplace good. In the back, all that marble? That's that Tom.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I'm here in the ivory tower as we speak.
Yeah, I see that. Yep.
So. No, it's been good.
I have a question. This is kind of sometimes an unpleasant topic and people don't like to talk about it, but as a family business, you have to. What do you have in place should something happen to one of you for, you know, spouses, kids, you know, what, how does that all work?
So great question. That was one that Lynn had a lot of sleepless nights about, like what if something happens to you doing all this traveling for WorkWave? You know, am I suddenly a partner at WorkWave and have to deal with your brothers, which she did not want to have to do. So part of that shareholders agreement that we put together, there was some life insurance involved with that. So we bought three life insurance policies. So basically the two brothers are the beneficiary of the policy holder. So if something were to happen to me, my brothers would get the proceeds from that life insurance policy. And then in the shareholders agreement, that's spelled out, that's used to pay off the spouse to basically recapitalize and get those shares back. So that was one of the things we did. The company pays for it. And it's kind of just, it alleviates a lot of the issues, you know, what if something were to happen, puts all that to bed. And it certainly makes our spouses a little happier knowing that there's a plan there if something should happen.
So are those key man policies, are they term or are they whole life or what do you use?
Term policies. Yep.
Yeah. Insurance can get expensive, especially as you get older when you need
they're
more
not
and more.
Cheap, but you know, it would, I think my father told me a long time ago, you know, you got to pay for insurance when you can least afford it.
Right.
And this is good insurance to have. You know, the policies aren't cheap. We pay them out of the company, out of the profits each year. So, but you know, it's the same face value on all the policies.
But not,
it's all good.
But not tax deductible, and neither are the proceeds when somebody kicks a bucket. So,
yep.
You know, but they're extremely important to have, you know, across all the owners and whatnot. And basically, for anybody who didn't understand it, so what happens is if something were to happen to Tom, his brothers get the money and buy his wife out. And the thing is that if you're in a growth mode, you want to keep updating that insurance because maybe you have $500,000 worth of insurance and now we're 10 years down the road and $500,000 wouldn't buy out your interest. Maybe you need $2 million worth of, and you have to keep after that.
Well, one of the things that I have a question about, and I feel like this is something that a lot of folks skip over when they're doing this, is have you guys agreed on how you're going to value the business? Like if someone wants to exit, or there's just say there is some, let's just, you know, some unforeseen circumstances, and now it's like, okay, we've got to buy out this brother or whatever. Is it documented out now how the business is going to be valued? Is there going to be a third party? Because much like what, you know, Dan just said, the value of a business may be very different depending on what mode you're in, right? If you're in growth mode versus if you're in profit preservation, I mean, have those guidelines been thought out and kind of documented, or is it just going to be more like, well, we're going to go X number off revenue and that's that?
Yeah, so ours is X number of revenue, but you know, a spouse can challenge that. That's part of the shareholders agreement. So if somebody wants to go at their expense and hire somebody like Dan to come back and figure out what it's worth, that would then set the value of it. But you know, it's a straight up multiple in the shareholders agreement currently. And it's one of those things in the back of my mind, I probably should address at some point, because back when we right. put it together, the multiples were probably 1x, and now with 3x plus, it's a different scenario. So same sure. thing with the insurance, sure. those need to be looked at and updated periodically for sure.
And even not so, the multiple, just the growth. So if you were at 1x and you were doing $1 million and now you're doing 2 million, you just doubled the size of the business. So there's two factors. There's the multiple, which who knows how much higher it can get. Probably not a whole lot more. But and then there's the growth. And so you got to keep after that.
Yeah. So our next topic, when I first started Triangle, my second hire was a sales guy. And this is the funniest thing I will never forget. As I was growing the business, I kept kind of working myself out of a job. I mean, at first I was a technician, and then I was, you know, once I got enough technicians, I became a kind of a service manager. And then after that, I became kind of a branch manager and so on and so forth. Well, this one guy who was with me, every time I would put a layer of management between me and him, because I mean, literally when we first started, we would go on jobs and sell them together. He goes, well, I can't work for that person. I'm still going to come to you, Donnie. I can't. And so then it would be, then you get a new manager and you're like, well, I can't work for this new person. I'm going to go to such, and I would laugh like, okay, whatever. But you know, that's a phenomenon that's not unique to someone getting a new manager. I know one of the things I've seen is in, you know, second, third generation businesses, you know, typically when there's a transition from one generation to the next, there can be a lot of high turnover of non-family employees. You know, some people feel connected to, say, the dad or whatever. And so a couple of questions here is, number one, have you guys experienced that at F&W? And then if so, have you done anything to try to prevent that? Because obviously, you know, people is what drive our business. And so I'm just kind of curious to hear how you guys handle that and if you've experienced that personally.
Yeah, so similar, Donnie. We still have some employees that were here when we purchased the company in 99. So some good friends and people that have made it through the transitions over the years. At the same time, we've had people come in that were super, super smart salespeople, service managers that just because of our infighting early on, just it was not an attractive place to work for them. So definitely a challenge. So I think by us structuring ourselves better with defined roles has certainly helped our employees understand that. We try to certainly promote from within. So, you know, we recently promoted a technician to a service manager. The guy's doing a great job. We've had people make the transition over to sales, general manager. So we try to go that route. The other thing that we've done is, you know, with ADP is just, I think, you know, when you can offer a Fortune 500 benefits package that has dental and vision and health and, you know, liability, not like disability insurance. And, you know, it's very attractive to people out in the marketplace. So it's been a challenge. I think we lost a lot of good people. When I look back, it's like, I would like to have them back. but I think that's kind of part of the growing pains of, you know, the family business. And some of these people I still see periodically and they're good friends. So, and they understand the dynamics that we went through. So.
Sure. So the ADP total source, we use it for the accounting firm, for our accounting firm. It's for anybody who doesn't know about it. It's basically it's employee leasing. They have a health policy with 500,000 other people. So you're in a very large pool and you can offer all those benefits. And the reason we did it is because I was constantly competing with large accounting firms, and I couldn't compete with them on the benefits side. So it's really a terrific thing. If anybody has any questions on ADP Total Source, by all means, get in touch with me because we have a lot to say about it, or maybe talk to Tom. But it was a good move. I'm sure if you get to several hundred employees, it probably makes more sense to bring in an in-house HR person. But if you're under 100 employees, it's the way to go.
Yeah, for the size we're at, I think it's awesome.
They're on ball. Yeah, I was gonna say, and to be the on ball, we do something similar. We do it with Paychex. I think you need the major payroll companies offer something similar to that. But we are absolutely doing the same thing. I mean, we kind of go under the EIN, we get better insurance, and 100% agree. It's a great, great move. So.
Yep. So. I have a question, a final question that's more, less on the family business, but as a consultant for WorkWave, do you have any advice? What's coming down the pike? How to deal with issues? Some
crystal ball
tips and tricks, things that are overlooked.
Yeah, so a lot of good advice here. So, you know, I think PestPak's a beast. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that it's super powerful, and I think that can be overwhelming for a lot of people when they first get into using it. So I think, you know, kind of you got to look at your processes and figure out what things you want to tackle first. So usually what I recommend to folks is, you know, what are you going to get the most bang for your buck with, right? Interesting story. A couple of years ago, I'm out. I get called to go consult, and I show up at this office, sizable company, you know, probably $3 or $4 million company at the time. And there's this giant, they're walking me around the office and they introduce me to the bookkeeper, and there's like three bookkeepers in there and they're all pulling their hair out. And there's giant stacks of paper everywhere. And I go, what's this? So that's the posting for the past week and a half that still hasn't been done yet. And the owner's trying to get numbers on it's not serviced and he has no idea. And they were still using paper and pen for service orders. So for me, it was like, you know, bang for your buck. You're going to eliminate probably two of those three positions with your bookkeepers posting wise. You just need somebody to kind of reconcile the batches each day. And you're going to save a ton of time with your technicians and make them look more tech savvy out in the field. So that's where we started with that company. And they were delighted with that. You know, so if you're still using paper and pen, it might be time to move on. And I still periodically run across companies doing it that way. For me, the cost of supplying a guy with a cell phone and the application, it's short money with the return you get on it.
The interesting thing with that, because one of the first clients that I had, it was a pretty big client, same thing. And it wasn't just on the customer side, it was on the vendor side. He had stacks of bills. They were repossessing some of his trucks, and some of his trucks were paid 5 months in advance because he had no systems to deal with it. But if you think about, like, from an audit perspective, what is the best way to steal from a pest control company? Well, if you know that the management is not posting those tickets and not keeping track of it, all you have to do is collect cash from a customer, rip up the ticket, and it's gone, and nobody will ever know about it. So it's important to know what you send the guys and gals out with and what they bring back. And even if it doesn't get serviced, that it either gets rescheduled or it gets disposed of in some sort of way. But that, is one of the easiest ways to steal from a company. So interesting.
You know, one of the things, okay, so before I even say this, I want to make sure that everyone understands I am CRM neutral. I am neither endorsing nor condoning. But I will say this, Triangle does use, we currently use PestPak. And I have considered myself to be somewhat of a power user since I started with it. I mean, I started with it back in 2007. And one of the most beneficial features I've ever seen come out of PestPak has been the report writer, bar none. That report writer absolutely changed my business. You know, one of the things I love about it is, you know, it's a steep learning curve to get it down. But once you get it down, I mean, we get data pushed to the right people at the right time. And, you know, we've got several dashboards that are, you know, they're automatically updated. And it just really, it took our business to the next level, because mainly, not the reports themselves, but just the fact that we could deliver the reports real time to the right people. That to me was a huge win. That to me is, you know, what I've seen come from WorkWave, that has been the most beneficial for my business.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. That's probably one of my favorite tools. And usually when I deal with a customer and they have, you know, are having issues or trying to look to automate something, it's usually my first go-to in the tool bag. It's so powerful. If you have a basic understanding of like Microsoft Excel or Google Sheets, the formulas in there are almost identical. And the other thing I see a lot of people not take advantage of is some of the export and scheduling functionality that it has. So Donnie, you mentioned dashboards that you update in real time. I do the same thing. So it allows me to do some things. Also, we talked about credit cards, and one of the issues is certainly following up with those expiring cards, or cards that have not gone through and processed correctly. We've automated a lot of that using the report writer tools. So we're automating emails to the clients that your card was rejected. So if you just think through it, I mean, it's a super, super good tool. And I would suggest to everybody, take a little time and learn it. One of the other things that WorkWave just introduced is certainly their PestPak Business Intelligence platform. Which is basically a bunch of key KPIs that, you know, if you don't want to take the time to build your own and report writer like Donnie and I have, the BI platform will actually do it for you. And we put a lot of time and effort. I've been part of that team for almost a year now working on that. Very impressive what we put together.
What are some of the KPIs really, that it tracks?
You know, not service ratios, callback ratios, production per hour, it just goes on, average days outstanding as far as receivables go, percentage of auto bill credit card payments or customers. So there's probably about 30 or 40 KPIs that we built into this.
And again, so did you set it up or is it all canned?
It's canned. So it's assuming you're using PestPak kind of in the standard kind of configurations. If you're doing custom things, we might need to work with you a little bit to get it working. But our goal was to build it out of the box that it would be effective for most folks. Unless you're doing something really weird.
And how often is it updated? Is it real time or
almost real time? It updates overnight, so you'll have all the business numbers through yesterday's close of business. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
The other thing I see too is that people are like, well, you know, oftentimes things don't work because there's some sort of setting or some sort of way that they're doing it. It's a little non-standard. I don't know. I mean, not that I'm in the business of getting unsolicited advice, but pay the money, you know, get someone in to help you get it set up properly, because the amount of time it would take you to figure that out and then write, I mean, it saves so much time if you just kind of fall within the parameters. I mean, it's not worth it. You know?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many new clients we go in and, you know, oh, well, we're looking to, get some information like, what's our valuation of routes going to be next month? And I said, well, the business valuation report will work. And then you go in and because of the way they set up PestPack, it doesn't work. Right. And so then, you're losing a lot of the juice. So it's important to get the thing set up properly.
It's a great program, but the problem is almost at times there's too many settings. So last time I looked, I think company configuration has over 300 different settings just on that one page when you go in there. And depending on how you have that set up, definitely changes the behavior of the application in a lot of other places. So you really have to think through when you're doing that stuff. So
I always tell people PestPack, the biggest strength is that it's really flexible. The biggest mm-hmm. weakness is that it's really flexible.
So. Exactly. Exactly. You know, that's why it's run by like 70% of the top 100 companies are running PestPack. I mean, it's super flexible. It can adapt to the way you want to run your business, but you need to know how to set it up right. So one of the things we've also just recently introduced is their professional services team. So I'm part of that. So if you're in a situation where you just feel you're not getting your money's worth out of it, or just know that there's more to be gained, we can do an analysis of your system, see how you're using it, understand your workflows, and then make recommendations on how to kind of clean things up or reconfigure things. So we just launched that, and it's already been a big hit. We got a bunch of new customers come on because of that.
How do they charge? Is that an hourly rate, or is that how does that work?
Okay. Yeah, hourly rate. So they basically look at the amount of time required for it. They'll give you an estimate ahead of time. We'll also do custom report writer stuff. We'll do custom dashboard stuff. So, I mean, if you don't have somebody on staff like Donnie, you probably have somebody that's really good with report writer. It might be you. You can hire us to do that for you. So we'll meet with you, do a consultation, look for, understand what you're looking to accomplish, and then we can actually put the report together and do the legwork.
Interesting stuff.
It is. Tom, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for joining
Dan
and I. I have personally learned a lot about, I'm a first generation. Obviously, at some point, that'll change. And it'll be interesting to see I don't know how my story ends as far as what's going to happen with family, but I've learned a lot and appreciate your insight. And so one of the things that we like to do with the podcast is we always like to leave our listeners with just kind of some key takeaways. And so I just want to give you a moment to talk through what do you think are some key takeaways when it comes to operating a family-owned business and managing that and just working through the challenges that come with growing a family business.
I think having a good group of advisors is certainly where you start. I mean, without that shareholders agreement that we did early on, it would probably not be here today. It was critical for us kind of getting aligned as a family and as business partners. Like Dan, having you on board has been a tremendous help to us achieving our growth. Pointing out things in our P&L that we've overlooked we think we're doing good. Look at all this profit. And it's like, well, you're not getting any leads because of your marketing problem. Just having that insight and that industry knowledge that you see so many different companies and you can bring that to us and say, hey, listen, you're good here, you're bad here. There's room for some improvement or you're knocking it out of the park. It's always good to hear that. And then having, pick up the phone and say, hey, we're thinking about this. What do you think? You can talk us off the ledge or recommend that we move forward. So it's just that key advisors, attorney, CPA, certainly. We couldn't have done it without, those guys, you, Dan, and our attorney. So I would definitely start there. Other key takeaways, I would say, good systems and processes in place. That means your software platform, whatever you choose, I hope it's PestPack, but whatever you're using, just make sure it's meeting the needs of your company and the growth in the future. Because if you can't get good reports out of it, it's tough to know if you're hitting the marks that you're trying to hit. So that's certainly part of it. And then just being flexible. I mean, that's just, part of being family and taking care of the people. I mean, people probably is our biggest issue right now. It's just trying to get good people. The HR stuff with ADP helps. The COVID situation currently, while there's a lot of downside, there's a lot of good people unemployed out there. And we've actually built on our team this year and made some really key hires, and some good people have joined us. So that's been a plus for us as well.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, great takeaways there. Dan, anything to add? Any other questions you have? I mean, this has been great. I really enjoyed this podcast.
I think that about does it. The family business, the pest pack, you know, what a catch for your wife.
Make sure you remind her of that too. So
yes,
I think you tell her.
Like, make her watch this now.
They said I'm a great catch. All right, Tom. Well, with that, we're going to sign off again. Thank you for joining us for PMP Industry Insiders with Tom Gibbons, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much.